learning how to sew. Daddy's drinking beer, listening to the radio. Hank Williams sings.
Sex Acts Radio, presented by David Gardner Schulers here in the Rollo Insurance Studio.
Good tune.
Great tune. Ronnie, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm outstanding. It was a extremely busy day yesterday.
Yep.
Started in Houston with a camp, then drove from about noon to 2 from Houston to Franklin, Texas to coach 2 baseball games. By the time I got done doing all my stuff, is about a 14-hour Sunday work day. But that's what I signed up for, baby.
Yes, sir. And our next guest signed up to be the leader of the A&M baseball program, and he joins us every Monday, good or bad. And I appreciate Jim Schlossnagel joining us here. Schloss, good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I've had better weekends, but the sun came up this morning. It's somewhere. It's behind the clouds. But how are you guys doing today?
We're doing okay. Obviously, a very tough weekend. Just if you can, start us off with some overall takeaways from the 3-game set there in Tennessee.
Yeah, pretty disappointing. Well, not pretty disappointing. Very disappointing. Go on the road. Playing a great team. Super established program. And you actually score in the first inning of every game against some really good starting pitching. Not quite Paul Skeens from LSU, but all 3 guys, my opinion, that's the best pitching staff we've seen to this point. Even have a 3-run lead in one of the games with 9 outs to get and just can't hold it. Starting pitching is really, I mean, Lampkin, I thought, did a great job yesterday. I thought we competed really well against really good pitching, put ourselves in position to score runs. Either didn't get a timely hit, or at times we did, and then just couldn't hold the lead. We played good defense. Energy of the team was good. I thought the effort was good. We're struggling on the mound, and in the bigger picture, we have a ways to go to get our program to the level of the higher end SEC pitching that we're facing.
After playing LSU and Tennessee in these opening 2 weekends, Coach, just kind of where are you at now? Looking at those rosters, looking at your rosters, and this is, you know, I think maybe after last year, the success you guys have, I think people may overlook that this was still a real rebuilding process. So kind of where are things at in terms of that stance and getting to the level, you know, from 1 to 57 or however many on the roster that LSU and Tennessee have?
Yeah, so I think, you know, number one, our job's to coach the team we have, right? Coach last year's team, it's to get the most out of this year's team. Like I talked to the team about, you have your telescopic view, which is big picture, long term, and you have your microscopic view, which is day to day. And there's no excuses to be made. We're not going to do that. We have to make the guys on our team the very best version of themselves. You know, Nathan Detmer walked 25 guys in 92 innings last year. He's got 11 walks. I think Cortez walked 11 on the season last year. He's got 19 walks in 20 innings. So, you know, those guys are talented enough at this level to be giving us a better chance to win. Wanting, you can throw in that bunch too, but they're not currently. So that's the first thing. Is our job is to coach this team, the guys we have, and do the very best job we can with them. But bigger picture, there's no question that we have to continue, and we are. But when you take a job these days, you're not just one class recruiting class behind, you're 2 and 3 years. So how do you bridge that gap? Obviously, the transfer portal can be a part of that. We've seen how that can help us in guys like Palish and Micah Dallas to a point last year and a few other guys and some guys that we have on this year's team that I think are underachieving. But at the end of the day, when you evaluate the rosters of the 2 teams you're talking about, they have Tennessee, I think, had 2 or 3 transfer pitchers. Everybody else, I think they ran maybe 10 arms against us on the weekend, that all the right-handers at least touched, you know, 95, 96, 97 miles an hour, threw a lot of strikes with multiple pitches. And all, and other than 3 guys, those are all homegrown pitching. And so I think you see you know, how you stack recruiting classes on top of one another, just like you would in any other sport, and continue to grow the program. Obviously, a part of that is new facility and just everything. But that's, I don't want anybody to think that's any sort of excuse for how we play this weekend. We're plenty good enough. We're plenty talented enough to be competitive on the mound, and we're not doing it. But we do have, there is a gap between those programs that have been winning and established, and where we are, and that's why we were hired. That's why I came here, was to close, be a part of closing that gap, and get A&M, especially on the mound, back to, you know, those 2015-16 teams that I was a part of facing, where you, when you played A&M on those teams, you felt smothered by their pitching, and that's how we felt all weekend by Tennessee's.
Yeah, so Coach, what is it then? So, like, when you look at the analytics and what gets guys out in today's game of baseball, Nathan Detmer's got that stuff. You know, Troy Wanting's got that stuff. Chris Cortez has that stuff. So, when you're trying to put your finger on it, kind of, where are these troubles stemming from, at least in with command?
I mean, I'm open to suggestion because I'm not in the bullpen with them. I leave it up to Coach Yeske. Maybe I can walk down there some. I've sat in on, for example, Detmer's bullpen before. I've sat in on Cortez and Wanting, and I've watched him throw strike after strike after strike after strike. You know, it's not an effort thing. It's not an attitude thing. It's could it be a care too much? Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, there's not a whole lot I can do to help that. It's, you know, other than try to take the pressure off of them, which we've tried, you know, multiple times. At the end of the day, that's the difference between a really good player and a just okay player. It's the guy, you know, the guys that can take it from the bullpen into the game and have that even be better, versus the guys who just do it okay in practice. But with Detmer in particular, that's a weird one because he's had so much success, right? And he's done a great job pitching on Friday nights in this league. We saw it last year. So I guess pitchers can have slumps too, and maybe his next one will be better. But hope isn't a strategy. We got to figure it out.
Yeah, and to kind of turn the page, offensively, I think it continues to go in the right direction. Obviously, huge weekends from Jack and Hunter. I thought Jace was awesome on the weekend. Boast was a little unlucky. I thought one of the more unlucky weekends of the season, as many times as he was on the barrel and the ball got caught. And I also think Tennessee played great defense in the outfield. But overall, offensively, when you look at what you guys did, kind of where are you at in terms of your thoughts on how the guys are swinging the bats and just kind of the plan and approaches at the plate?
I thought it was really good. I thought we competed. If we would have competed on the mound as well as we competed at the plate, we would have been just fine. We definitely would have won at least one ball game and maybe more than that. But I thought the approaches were good. Like you said, Bose, he hit a ton of balls hard, especially yesterday. Werner is coming on. Taysom Wells had a great at bat. You know, the play that the guy made in right field, first and second, nobody out, was certainly a game changer when he laid out and caught that ball, because that was at least two runs. So I think, you know, up and down the lineup, it's, you know, pretty solid. I think Brett Minnick, he traveled with us, took batting practice all weekend. I doubt he plays tomorrow night. He's now physically, I think, ready to play. Now we have to get him in baseball hitting shape. So, in other words, if you were in the big leagues, you would send Minnick down to A-ball or whatever and get him 3 or 4 days worth of at-bats, and then he'd be ready to play. So we kind of have to do that portion of it right now, where we'll get him some simulated game at-bats, have him, he hasn't hit against the high-velocity pitching machines and stuff like that yet. So if we can get him in there, it's a much more physical lineup, the chance to impact the ball.
With Texas obviously coming tomorrow and Ole Miss, what's the message to the team right now, just obviously to look ahead, move forward?
Yeah, you've got to stay the course. You know, I mean, I haven't looked at standings today, but for the first time all year, Saturday night I did and listed out, I think, six teams that were in that one, and either hadn't won a conference game, had only won one or two games, and I think it was six or seven teams, and just told the team that, you know, in this league, history has proven that out of those six teams, I guarantee you two of them are going to College World Series, and probably three or four of them are going to be in the NCAA tournament. So who's it going to be and why? You know, it's the team that stays the course. It's the team that stays healthy. Maybe it's a team that gets healthy, but it's a long year. So you try and find what is the balance of giving them a big picture so they don't, and I don't, lose my mind in the short term, but also create a sense of urgency that need to win, you know. And so that's a fine line, and we just need to go out and play well and get a win, whether it's against Texas or whoever tomorrow night, and then try to build on that and start feeling better about ourselves.
Coach, where you at in terms of you're kind of platooning those outfield spots? I know Brett's expected to bat soon, but kind of those outfield spots, and then you know, you just got to ask about it. Ryan Targotch continues to struggle at the plate.
Yeah.
Kind of how long of a leash does he have before you start looking at maybe getting Caden Kent or another infielder in that spot?
He's got a pretty long leash, man. I mean, he had a bad day yesterday. I think the day before he impacted a bunch of balls into the wind, swung the bat well. Caden certainly is a talented guy and has a lot of versatility and is going to have a huge role. And he has a huge role in this program. But if the roles were reversed, you know, we would want to give Caden the longest rope. A guy, you know, you're talking about a guy who led the SEC in RBIs last year and could still change the game with one swing. So, I think, you know, if Minute gets back, we're going to have to ride him out. Jace, like you said, is really coming on. So then it's going to be down to kind of pick the hot hand as to who's going to play center field. You know, is it JT? Is it Wells? Is it, you know, Tab Tracy every now and then? Whoever you're trying to, whatever you think the best matchup is, they're trying to ride a hot hand. But, you know, the best example of, you know, what's the best predictor of future success would be past performance. So try to give those guys the benefit of the doubt because they've earned it.
Yeah, so tomorrow night against the Longhorns, have you thought about pitching? Obviously, I want the team should know first, but have you told the team who's going to start or kind of where's your head at in terms of that game?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't told anybody yet. I have a pretty good idea who we're going to throw. We're going to run strike throwing lefty out there more than likely. And, I mean, it's a secret. Who cares? Tadeo, I think, is earning the opportunity to take a look at that, but it's going to take everybody. And, you know, the guys that are available after the weekend and some guys who left at home are going to have to help us out. Hopefully we can find somebody who wants the baseball, wants to fill up the strike zone and compete within the strike zone.
Schloss, we appreciate it, sir. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday.
All right, have a great day. See you.
Bye-bye. You too. Jim Schlossnagel there on the hotline. All right, when we come back, a little more from Bronny on the baseball side of things. And then we're going to talk to Trey Wallace from Outkick. He's been covering a bunch of the NCAA tournament games. We'll talk with him. That and more. Right now we're talking Milliken Reserve, farm-to-table community in College Station. They got homes. They got trails. They got wide-open spaces. And OB told me earlier this morning he thinks they have giraffes. I don't think they do. I don't think they have giraffes there. But apparently he's got a toy giraffe in his office that I want to see at some point. But they're dedicated to – yeah, seriously. He has one.
I don't like to – like, I really don't listen to the first hour. So just get – I think it's better if I just get the highlights from, like, you or Kay. What was it last week? They talked about Olin having popcorn butter in crevices and all this kind of stuff.
That's not good. Yeah. I also talked about taking a bath in macaroni and cheese.
See, this is better. This is better than actually listening to it. It's just getting the bits and pieces.
Just being here. You should check out the Texas Rewind every Monday through Friday on YouTube, by the way, presented by Yeti. Back to Milliken Reserve. All right, they don't have giraffes, but they got everything else out there. 2,600 acres of open space, 30 miles of trails and homes out there, and an extensive network of trails throughout a wooded landscape. Beautiful place to go hang out right down the road, right? If you're here at Texas, you can take Wellburn and go just I don't know, what direction is that? South. Go south, right? You just go south towards Milliken Reserve, and if you're coming from Houston, you'll see it on your left-hand side, right as you pass Navasota, right in between, you'll find Milliken Reserve. Beautiful place to go hang out. They provide a natural setting for people to connect to nature and to each other. The website is MillikenReserve.com, MillikenReserve.com. Welcome back, Texags Radio, presented by David Gardner's Jewelers here in the Rollo Insurance Studio. Appreciate everybody listening in here on this Monday. A weekend of baseball that was not fun. It was that same feeling, that, oh man, here we go again feeling all weekend long as I'm watching the games, Bronny. I do appreciate how Schloss is always willing to come on and address, you know, the hard situations.
Yeah, I think to the first question that I asked him, I do think last year may have reset some people's kind of outlook on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back 2 years and remember what he took over, 9-21, didn't even make the SEC tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Last year will be a forever legendary team because of the expectations they had coming in and what they achieved and just kind of how the team grew together and the sum was greater than the individual parts. And so you got a lot of those pieces back in terms of the lineup off of last year's team, but you're missing a lot of the pitching, okay? So the pitching depth had a long way to go from whatever they took over. They were able to mask it a little bit last year and just kind of press all the right buttons, and things went their way a lot last year, yep. Right? Things are not going their way right now. Okay, so when you look at and you watch them play, Tennessee made, we call it at 12, we call it heartbreaking defense. Like, you want to play heartbreaking defense to where – those balls that are hit, they think are going to be RBI and timely hits, and you make plays that break their hearts. And really what that does is change momentum of games and potentially change outcome of games. You know, to Coach's point, what Coach said was yesterday, Cason Wells comes up with first and second, nobody out in a tie ball game, and he hits a rocket to right field, and the Tennessee right fielder running to his left makes a full extension layout grab right off the top of the turf.
Yep.
Right after Jack Moss hit the home run in the first inning yesterday, Austin Bose comes up and hits a ball that would have been either a homer or off the top of the wall. The Tennessee left fielder makes an incredible play. That's heartbreaking defense for a team that's struggling. Okay, so what you saw last year was a lot of stuff go A&M's way, a lot of breaks go their way. They made a ton of their own breaks by the time they found their identity. But you also had guys play to their expectation level and above last year. And I'm sitting there looking, especially on the pitching side, who has pitched to their expectation level right now into the season. And that's not just expectations from me. That's expectations from the kids themselves and from the coaching staff and from various folks in the program. So, you know, I go out there and I watch them inter squad more than anybody in the national media, local media. I'll go out there and watch them a lot. So I'm not making this stuff up whenever I formulate these opinions to say, man, I think Carson Lambert's got a chance to be really good.
Yeah.
And he has not pitched up to his expectation level. And Josh Stewart was a kid they went and got out of the transfer portal who was incredibly good over the summer in the Cape Cod League. He has not pitched his expectation level. And then that's without going into Detmer and Cortez and Wansing. So your starting rotation has not pitched to their expectation level. Brad Rudess was awesome last year. He's been just okay this year.
Yep.
Not pitched to his expectation level. So it's not just one guy, it's a bunch of them. So there's hope in that there was expectations coming in. These kids are talented. We've seen a lot of them do it before. I know, like, the metrics of how Chris Cortez and Wansing and Detmer throw the baseball makes it tough to hit. So if they can, I think it's a mentality thing. I think they need something to grab onto, just like last year's club did. You don't get to pick and choose where you find it, but it can pop up anywhere. This team needs a spark. This team needs an identity on the pitching side. This team needs a little spine and backbone on the pitching side, I think, is a proper way to say it on radio. And they need somebody that is going to command the presence of the field when they get on the mound. Justin Lampkin has pitched extremely admirably. He's a tough kid. He's a strike thrower. He's a future. He's the next, looks like the next Texas A&M ace, right? Would you agree with that?
100%. Yeah.
But to ask him to take the burden of the pitching staff on his shoulders as a freshman is a lot. when you go out there and you watch Ryan Hawks from Louisville, when you watch Paul Skeens at LSU, when you watch Chase Dolander, Chase Burns, Drew Beam, all the three starters from LSU, from Tennessee on the weekend, watch their presence around the mound. I mean, Ryan Hawks was walking around like he was the biggest dude in the city of Houston that night walking around the mound. Paul Skeens, we saw how Paul Skeens interacted. Was it a line drive that Moss hit? He caught it and spiked the ball.
Mm-hmm.
This team, this pitching staff needs some of that edge, man.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do it when you're not pitching well. But if you're going to have it when you're going good, you got to have it when you're going bad too. They've got to have somebody step up and take the onus of that, responsibility for that, and get this thing going the right direction from the pitching side. Because like Coach said, I think the offense continues to move and move and move a little bit more in the right direction, right? So I thought this weekend offensively was just typical baseball. Like,
right.
That's how baseball goes. Sometimes you had guys strike out with runners in scoring position. You also had guys get some key hits. You had some balls on the barrel that got caught. You had some balls that you didn't hit hard fall in. That was a normal baseball offensive weekend. I thought they competed and at the plate overall on the weekend. I thought it was much better. I think they continue to go in the right direction in terms of that. It can't always be about results offensively.
Sure.
Because the game is skewed so far in terms of odds toward the pitcher. So it can't always be about results, hits, run production. You got to kind of look deeper in that when you're trying to analyze offensive baseball. But I still think they're struggling to find, and until Brett Minnick gets back, they still don't know what their best nine is. Coach Schloss even said they're going to continue to platoon that third outfield spot to try to play the matchup. I just think you talk about expectations. Ryan Targach obviously led the SEC in RBIs last year, hasn't met expectations this year. Trevor Werner, been in and out with injuries his whole career, hasn't played to his expectations. Austin Boast, he's been fine recently.
Struggled
in the beginning. And
Jack
for
Moss
his
too.
For his expect well, but Jack's certainly all the way back now, right?
Yeah,
Jack Moss and Hunter Haas are
the guys
right now. And Austin's not far behind when you look at the amount of balls he's been on the barrel over the course of the weekend, over the last 2 weeks. The ship's definitely pointed in the right direction for him. But Austin Boast is a two-time 300 hitter or greater with 10 home runs in the SEC.
Right.
So he is not hit to his own expectation level and what we've seen him do either. So it's a combination of a lot of things right now. There's certainly no sin in losing series to LSU and Tennessee, especially when you kind of dive in and think about, man, how close were you to taking the Saturday game against LSU and the Saturday game against Tennessee.
Right.
But here we sit 1-5 with Texas coming in, who's riding a heater, who's playing much better. I think they won the series this weekend. They've won like 13 out of their last 14 games. And then you've got an Ole Miss team struggling, just like you are, coming in on the weekend. This is a test your manhood week for this Aggie baseball team.
Absolutely.
I think this week coming up might be the most important week of the season, because you've got to make some decisions on what you're going to be. Because like Chris Burke was saying on the audio or on the TV broadcast over the weekend, and I thought it was, I've heard him say it before, but I'm looking at A&M's schedule and kind of what everybody else on the schedule is doing, Mizzou, Kentucky, Arkansas,
South Carolina.
Right. But when you look at all that's coming up, Chris Burke said, it can get late really early in this league. So if you just look at just managing this first three weekends, well, now all that's kind of flipped on its head, because you got 1 weekend left and now you're facing an 0-6 team coming in. And what you got on the other side of that is going to be really tough now.
Yep.
So this team needs to decide what they're going to be and how they're going to go about being it really, really soon, or it can get late pretty early.
Bronny, in about 30 seconds or less, you talk about those heartbreaking defensive plays. How do you call it?
Heartbreaking defense, yeah.
Yeah, heartbreaking. There was an opportunity, and it was a hard opportunity, in the Saturday game. Who was playing right field?
Jordan Thompson. Look, man, like
that's
no. By the way, for every one of you that are sitting behind your keyboard watching that, or on your phone watching that, and you want to tweet or put something on our game thread about how that play should have been made, you've never – I would love to see you catch a fly ball, first of all, just a normal fly ball in a domed setting where there is no wind.
And the wind there.
The wind there was up to it was steadily at 35 miles an hour with gusts to 40. The ball off the bat, 108 miles an hour, and it landed 60 feet from the wall.
Mm-hmm. And he had to make that. I guess my point was going to be, last year it felt like that play sometimes was made. It was an impossible play, in my opinion, but that ended up being very costly because of the wind. You know,
sure it did. Yeah. And, it is an impossible play. Like, I don't know how many big leaguers make it. If you make that read off the bat to go to the fence, which you probably should when the ball's hit that hard, I don't know how you make up the ground to get there. And that's your most seasoned, experienced outfielder that couldn't adjust and make the play. But yeah, it was an enormous spot in the game because it ends up looking like a misplayed right ball in right field hurt you and that your defense cost you. And in all actuality, your defense, the two elements of the game of baseball that this team has done extremely well from pitch one up to now is they've played extremely good defense and they've run the bases extremely well. Yeah. That's where they've kind of hung their hat. That's what's kept them into some of these games. The offense has got to continue to come around, and they have got to pitch more competitively. Have to.
Yep. All right, Brian. Thank you, sir. Yep. All right. When we come back here on Texas Radio, we have Trey Wallace from OutKick talking a little NCAA tournament, that and more. Texas Radio. All right, we're back. Texas Radio, presented by David Gardner Jewelers in the Rollo Insurance Studio. Been in enjoying March Madness. I know many of you have. I did take a little boycott for a couple of days after A&M lost. Sorry, it's just what I do sometimes. It's all right. Trey Wallace was keeping me entertained with his great coverage there. Senior SEC reporter for OutKick was in Louisville for the Florida Atlantic and San Diego State wins. He was there for all of it. Let's go straight to the hotline. He's driving, but he's got great info. Trey, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you, brother?
I'm good, man. It's been a minute. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yeah, man. It's good to hop on with you. As I drive down 75, just got out of Louisville, and turns out to be a crazy little regional that I really wasn't expecting, David.
Yeah, man. It was crazy. I enjoyed watching. I loved your coverage. So I'm going to ask you the question I asked at the top of the show. And I'm going to do something that I hate that sports radio people do, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to answer the question for you, and then I'm going to give you the information. All right, so I apologize in advance. I think it's better to watch a Final Four with these Cinderella stories than it is to have the Blue Bloods on television. If I'm paying money in the arena or the stadium, I would rather watch the Blue Bloods. All that being said, do you think there's going to be more or less interest in this Final Four?
You know, I kind of agree with you on that part. I think that, look, viewers, people this week, the folks that have been around college basketball for so long, they're going to be a little agitated. Ah, there's no Blue Bloods in there. Nobody's going to watch. The ratings will be horrible for Saturday and Monday. But I promise you, come Saturday night, there's going to be people tuned in to the semifinals to see if Florida Atlantic, a team like that, can finish it off, or San Diego State. And then we get to Monday night, it's going to be the same old thing. Yeah, ratings might be down just a little bit, but people are going to be tuned in. And look, if I'm going to a Final Four, look, do I want to see some Cinderella playing a Duke or a North Carolina, something like that, and win it? Yeah, that would be great. But, every now and then, it's not bad in college athletics to have a little parity. And I think what we get this weekend kind of shows that. And look, I just watched San Diego State, beat Alabama. They come out yesterday. They beat Creighton, a team that just wears you down. They hung around, finally beat Creighton, down in the last 3 minutes. Like, that's a team I'm interested in watching. And you look what Florida Atlantic did up in Madison Square Garden. I mean, it's not easy. You beat Tennessee. You beat Kansas State. Now you're playing for a Final Four. I mean, there are many storylines here that I'm very interested in this week before we get down to Houston. And look, man, I'll take it. Every now and then somebody's going to complain about, the Blue Bloods. But to me, it's nice to have a little bit of craziness involved.
No doubt about that. Talking to Trey Wallace here. All right, so let's talk about that end of that Creighton-San Diego State game because I'm kind of torn. I don't like the call, but it is a foul. But if it wasn't a foul earlier, is it really a foul? So I'm kind of torn the way that whole game ended.
Yeah, I mean, look, I even go back, I go back to the inbound play. You know, San Diego State's inbounding it. He overthrows it. Trey puts it right back up in there. It's a tie ball game. You know, and I think a lot of that play gets lost in what happened in that final minute. So you set things up, you know, where San Diego State gets the ball around 11. You're driving to the lane, and from where I was sitting on press row, you know, it was hard to get a view. I just saw the player kind of fall to the ground. So then you go back and you look at it. He had his hand on his hip, and I think, honestly, if the Creighton defender doesn't extend that arm, I don't know if there's a foul, but, you know, you look at it. To me, if it's a foul, you got to call it. And I don't care if there's 20 seconds left, if there's 15 seconds left, or there's 1.2 seconds left on the clock, you've got to call that foul. Now, were they doing that the whole game? No. I mean, it got a little tense in the paint, I would say, between both squads. But I'm the kind of guy, man, where, look, I go back. Look, in the same arena, David, I think it was 3-4 years ago, I was watching Tennessee and Purdue play. And Tennessee's Lamonte Turner fouled Carson Edwards with like 0.5 seconds left in the game and gave Carson Edwards and Purdue a chance to tie it, send it to overtime. It's crazy that I was in the same spot, or we were in the same spot, you know, watching a regional in Louisville, and it comes down to the final play. But that's what it was. So, I mean, if we're going off history, we've seen this before. So it wasn't that big of a shock to me, especially when I went back and watched the video.
Talking to Trey Wallace here on Texags Radio. I want a little more info because I know you did a little piece on the brothers out there, Adam Seiko and Arthur Kaluma. The drama, the relationship. They played each other last year. They played this year, obviously with one going to the Final Four. What? Just give a little more spice in their storyline.
I mean, it's crazy that they would go up against each other in the NCAA tournament again. You're talking about two brothers that played on the Uganda national team together. Obviously, grew up together. You know, both ended up at different spots. You looked at the way they were going. I watched that yesterday. I kind of paid attention to see if they would ever guard each other. And you saw it a few times yesterday. And just the backstory, I mean, just imagine you are out there and you're playing for a Final Four spot. You've got to go up against your brother to advance. And you're going to do anything and everything you can to get past him. I thought it was a very, you know, telling situation. You know, there was a hard foul between the brothers at one point in the first half. You know, they kind of looked at each other, kind of smirked. You know, and it's just the history that they have going back so far. I mean, and the fact that they played together for so long, they know each other's game. So, you know, there was one point, it was at halftime, actually, and I looked up at the scoreboard, and there was only a combined 6 points between the pair. And a lot of that has to do with what you know, a scouting report. How do you keep one guy away from the basket and the other and the guarding factor? And I just thought, you know, it's like that movie. I don't know if people have seen that movie, Warrior, where Tom Hardy and Egerton are in the cage. And, you know, it's there's that line in the movie where it's, you know, Mom, hide the fine china, the brothers are fighting again. You know, that's kind of how I felt going into this game. And it added a different layer to that game yesterday. I thought it was fantastic. You know, the ending was tough, having to sit there and watch those brothers hug each other and knowing that one's going to be sitting in the family section next week and the other's going to be playing. But, man, you add that spice to a game like that. It, to me, you know, just the viewers sitting there watching it, maybe a lot of people, you know, before tuning in, didn't know that. But, man, it took it to a whole different level, and I really enjoyed watching the interaction between the two, especially when they were, you know, they were smirking, they were talking trash on the court. It was fun to watch, man, a different layer. And, you know, one's going to the Final Four in Houston, and the other's going to travel with the team plane. And it just it's one of those endings where it's kind of like a storybook ending. We'll see if San Diego State can finish it off with a championship, though.
How about Florida Atlantic? I did not know about their radio team losing coverage or losing their broadcast power. Were they able to scramble and get back on?
So that was the look. I love stories like that, and being in radio for a long time when I first got started in the business. So, you know, a little backstory. People didn't know it. So the Florida Atlantic, their radio broadcast crew, they lost power with their Ethernet cord. They have to connect into an Ethernet cord. They had the NCAA has it set up where they can broadcast. So they lost power. It was right around the 30-second mark left in the game. I mean, FAU is about to make history. All of a sudden, the play-by-play announcer, he's got dead air. He gets a text message. Hey, brother, you got dead air. So he's having to scramble and figure out how to get back on the air. Finally, Kansas State called a timeout with about 18 seconds left in the game. And it gave him time. He reached behind him. There was an Ethernet cord at the second table behind him. Reached behind him, plugged it into his computer. Now, here's the kicker. There was a writer from West Palm Beach that's a buddy of his that covers FAU. He actually had to hold the Comrex machine, and the Comrex machine is just a way for them to broadcast. He had to hold that in the air while this gentleman, I mean, Ken Sullivan, he got to call the last 15 seconds of the basketball game and send that off with a, you know, FAU's going to the Final Four, can't believe it's happened, but I'm telling you, being in the business, and just like you, can you imagine having a blackout if Texas A&M is about to clinch a Final Four spot and you can't broadcast it to your fans? So that's what he was going through. All the credit in the world to Ken for getting back on the air all in the last 10 seconds. But I tell you, about out of all the stories that come out of the NCAA tournament this weekend, that was one of my favorites, him getting the call that last 10 seconds.
No doubt about that. I mean, just the horror. I'm thinking of putting myself in that same position if it had anything to do with A&M. Hey, let me close with this. NIL in Miami. I took interest in that game because they were playing Texas, and I have a lot of love for the University of Miami. How about how NIL, at least in basketball, I mean, I think it can change in all sports, no doubt about that. We've seen it. But I think really in basketball, we're seeing how one or two guys can make all the difference in the world. Talk to me a little bit about NIL and the way it affects a basketball team.
You know, it's a conversation I was having with an NCAA official last night in Louisville. We were talking about teams getting put together by one or two players that are able to make that run. You look at Miami's roster this year, you know, for them to be able to go out, get two to three players, NIL is a factor. Let's not be stupid about this to anybody out there that thinks, you know, these players just ended up in Miami, you know, without money being a factor in this. But I will say, look, the game is changing. And you see in football, okay, they can go out, a football team can go out and sign, let's just say 12 out of the 25 guys assigned to a class. They get nice NIL deals when they come. The rest are going to have to earn it. But, with basketball, it only takes one or two players to really turn your team around. And if you got to spend the money to be able to go out and get a player, then that's what NIL has turned into. And look, until something changes from a government standpoint, which is not going to happen, by the way, because lawmakers don't want to get involved in this because they're going to have to make student-athletes employees. But once, you know, if nothing changes, this is how it's going to stay. And I don't have a problem with it. I don't. I think when, you know, the new rules that are going to come out when it comes to transfers and, you know, the non-participation opportunity forms that come out that you can't sign for a player just to go somewhere else, maybe that changes just a little bit. But look, if you've got a roster and Jim Larrañaga needed a player and they go out and recruit that player, and all of a sudden he's getting some extra money for coming to that school through NIL purposes. And by the way, it worked. You know, it worked not just because Miami is playing in a Final Four. Look at all the attention that they're getting. The return on investment that Ivan Wong has brought to Miami is tenfold right now for what he got paid to go down there. So, you know, in certain circumstances, I look at it, I'm like, okay, all right, it worked out. Others, it doesn't. And you just, you know, you got to bite the bullet when it comes to the money that's put out there. But I think you're going to start seeing, even this year, man, look at all the players already in the portal right now. Crack the top players. You'll see NIL deals come out because these boosters love to brag about it. So I just, you know, I feel like that it, in the end, is it a good thing? I don't know. That's up for interpretation. But it's not going to change, so I'm just blowing with it right now.
Hey, Trey, safe travels, my friend. Thanks so much. Let's do it again soon.
Hey, buddy. I look appreciate you guys. Have a great day. Thank you.
You too. Trey Wallace, one of my favorites out there, doing great work there. We'll come back with Around Aggieland next on Texas Radio.
Yeah, Miami, South Beach, bringing the heat,
Have we canceled Will Smith yet?
I don't think we have. I don't believe so.
You're familiar with this song, right?
Yeah, I'm not Mrs. like pop culture like you think I am. I just
that's why you went on Twitter and blasted me.
That was not. My dad did agree with you. I will say that. So I just any teenage girl right now is going to agree with me that Taylor Swift is the best of our generation.
Did you just realize what you just said?
What? Any teenage girl?
Yeah. Stop.
Any
I'm a
man over
damn
the age
near 50-year-old man.
30? Not going to agree with me.
I gave her props. She's great. Just I'm not going to listen to her. Like
it's fine. It's fine. But if you're just be the good dad and turn it on for your daughter
I do.
In the car.
Okay. Never said I don't. You've okay. questioned my parenting twice today about Snapchat and about music. All right.
It sounds like I'm not going to be a good parent to K-Tina, apparently.
Saying. And just so you know, I know there's going to be a day in hopefully not 9 months. In the next 20 years,
you're going to have that.
In the next 20 years where you're going to be like, God, David was right. You know, I'm just
you
saying.
Know,
he was right.
That day will come and I'll search you up like you do with all your other people.
I
and I'll be like,
up.
David Nuno, you remember me? K-Tina? She's a mess.
She's a mess. Around Aggieland now, presented by Norman G. State Bank. Norman G. State Bank, rock solid banking. The website, normangstatebank.com. All right, K-Tina. Sorry. Kane Eggly.
That's my child, not me, remember?
Future child.
Future child. So hopefully my future child can see a little more Aggie sports success,
yes,
we'd like
please.
To say. So baseball, the number 21, they are not ranked anymore, according to D1 Baseball. We're swept this past weekend in Knoxville by Tennessee, falling 10-4 on Friday, 8-7 on Saturday, and then 9-6 on Sunday. They will host rival Texas this Tuesday. That'll be a big game. Hope we can pull that one off. That is sex for.
Remember, like a month ago, we're like, oh, we're gonna crush them.
Oh man, now, but like, if we do win that, game,
if we get good pitching, we win.
That's a momentum booster. Yeah, exactly.
It comes down to the pitching with this team. If we get good pitching, we'll be fine.
And then have a big series with Ole Miss coming up next weekend, and then the Texas game can be viewed on SEC Network.
Yep.
Softball picked up their second road conference win of the year this past weekend with number 11 Kentucky. They picked up their first two wins in a doubleheader on Saturday, and then dropped game 3, unfortunately. But they're looking to find some success on the road. They will. Return back to Davis Dunn playing Lamar on Tuesday and then Incarnate Word on Wednesday. Those games can be found on SC Network Plus. Women's tennis completed the sweep over the state of Alabama, taking down the Crimson Tide in Tuscaloosa on Friday and then winning at number 11 Auburn on Sunday. So congrats to them. They keep doing a great job. Men's tennis, unfortunately, were handled this past weekend in Knoxville, falling to Tennessee 6-1. And then men's golf began play at the Valspar Collegiate on Monday in Florida, and then they will finish that tournament on Tuesday, so we'll have updates on that. And then Equestrian were runner-ups this weekend at the SEC Championship, defeating number 6 Georgia on Friday, and then in the semifinal, they fell to number 2 Auburn at the championship meet. So some teams are having some success. We wish those Diamond Sports, especially right now, the best. So.
Okay, Tina, thank you so much.
Of course.
Appreciate you. When we come back on Texags Radio, Billy Lucci in studio. A lot of football, a lot of basketball, a lot of baseball, and maybe some parenting choices.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Maybe he would have good advice.
Texags Radio.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.